over the city, which was where the underworld war came in. It was actually Alfhild raiding the raiders, trying to get her stuff back, and to do it before anybody figured out what they had. That was why she'd been so pissed at Blue. Here she was, trying to keep things nice and quiet, when along comes a homicidal battle troll drawing everybody's attention. She'd managed to keep a lid on that through James, who had pulled rank to take control of the crime scenes and any weapons they contained, but she couldn't watch everyone. So she'd tried to recruit me to pimp on the Senate's investigation for her. It was also why she'd showed me those weapons, so that if I ran across any more, I wouldn't think anything of them, just assume they were the same crap she'd already given me an explanation for. And meanwhile, maybe I'd hunt down Blue for her in exchange for Finn, because she had too many balls in the air and needed some help. But she was already too late, because the Senate clashed with some of her guys that same night, when they both decided to raid the same smuggler, and found the motherload of weapons he'd taken from the albino stock without any idea what they actually were. He didn't have time to find out before the Senate took them to Radu's, where Alfhild's people took them from us. And now where were they? "Call the mage," Marlo snapped. "Get a location." "She already did," Luis Cesar said. "His phone is off." "Ping him, then. We have contacts, which we've used. It's not that simple." And no, it wasn't. Cell phone tower records weren't that reliable, despite what TV cop shows liked everyone to believe. In a rural setting, a single tower might service several hundred square miles, and even in New York City, where they clustered close together, you were still talking two or more. Not exactly a small area in a place as crowded as this one. And that was assuming your call was routed to the closest tower, which it often wasn't. So all we really knew for sure was that James was still in the city. Well, and one other thing. "James was frothing at the mouth to get his hands on Blue," I told Marlo. "Probably because he kept drawing attention to the people who had those weapons. So? So he gave me a 2-day window to track him down, and it's up tonight. Why 2 days? And if he was expecting to hear from me, why not take the call?"
Marlo frowned. "Perhaps he retrieved all the weapons," Mouthy said, "and no longer cares what the troll attacks."
"Maybe. Or maybe whatever is happening tonight."
"What do you mean, happening tonight?" Marlo demanded. "The consul was already attacked." "Using only a small portion of the weapons," Luis Cesar pointed out. "What is Alfhild doing with the rest?"
"And nobody knows where James is," I added. "I called War Mage HQ, but they said it was his day off."
"Check it," Marlo snapped, and one of his boys moved out into the hall, a phone to his ear.
"So I called his wife, who said he hasn't been home in 5 days. He told her he was working a case, but she's worried. Being gone this long isn't like him."
"Map."
Another of the guys pulled one out of a pocket and laid it on the flower. "So I called his father, but Rufus hasn't seen him either." I cut off, because Marlo wasn't listening. He'd bent over the map, so Luis Cesar could show him where the cell phone tower had pinged. I tried to concentrate on it, too, and on where James might be in all those crisscrossing streets, but I wasn't seeing it. I was seeing him with that crown of flowers his little girl had made for him, laughing at something his wife had said. That's why Alfhild needed to die, I thought. Because of James. And all those other Jameses she'd crushed under her heel through the centuries. The poor bastards back in Faerie. The hundreds or maybe thousands of baby vamps in Venice. The Dark Fae. She'd destroyed countless lives, thoughtlessly, carelessly, on her climb to the top, because they didn't matter to her. They just didn't matter. Marlo and Luis Cesar continued the debate, but I'd had enough. There was a minuscule opening in the crowd, and I went for it, elbowing my way through to Coffee Lover, who was still patiently waiting. The Fae were better at that sort of thing than I was. Tell me some good news, I said, before he even opened his mouth. He arched his eyebrow at me.
You have a visitor.
I scowled. Who is it this time? He didn't answer, just stepped out of the way to show me another doorway filled with vampires, and in the middle of them, Curly Abbott, looking like Porky Pig with his shirt rucked up over his fat little belly and his blue eyes huge, and Ray, standing beside him, appearing unbelievably smug.
Curly has something he'd like to tell you.
Chapter 57 K-k-k. The security guard waited patiently.
K-k-k.
Less patiently.
K-k-k. Oh, for God's sake!
That was Ray, who hit Curly on the back of the head.
Curly Abbott,
Curly spat, as if the strike had knocked something loose.
And friends.
The guard ran Curly's little black membership card through a reader. Curly made a sound that defied description, and then bounced a little in the driver's seat.
Hurry up. I have to go to the bathroom.
There's one in the...
I know where it is,
Curly said, grabbed his card back and hit the gas, skidding the tires and shooting us away from the gatehouse. So much for a low-key entrance, I thought, and then forgot to worry about it when the crappy industrial park ahead of us rippled and changed. Big time.
So this is how the other half lives,
Ray said, sounding impressed. I didn't blame him. A second ago, we'd been looking at a rusted-out hulk of a factory, about to fall into the sea. It was the kind that Red Hook, Brooklyn's lesser-known seaside hood, had a lot of, along with parking lots like the one next door, where razor wire and rusted shopping carts passed for landscaping. But suddenly, all that was gone. Instead, manicured lawns spread out in all directions. Flower beds materialized, planted in undulating rows of different shades of blue and edged by taller, white-blooming bushes, like the ocean followed by breaking surf. Silky, smooth blacktop replaced the pitted wonder outside, and a space opened up in the middle of the big circular drive, boasting a reflecting pond with sprays of water and a huge sculpture of silver metal and aqua glass. The sculpture was abstract, with mostly curved pieces shooting upward from a central base, but it nonetheless managed to give the impression of a group of sea deities rising from the water, presumably the ones that gave this place its name, Oceanid. In case your mythology wasn't that good, and mine wasn't, it was also written in crystal letters on the 5-story white stone building that framed everything else. I could see right through to the other side, courtesy of an all-glass section that went the full height of the building, showing the water and city skyline beyond, where a tiny Statue of Liberty was looking dull and kind of chintzy in comparison. We slung into a parking spot off to one side, and Curly jumped out, rabbiting for the employee entrance. I guess he really did have to go. The rest of us piled out and followed him, while a line of beautiful people inched closer to the casino's front entrance and valet parking. I watched a gorgeous brunette in a few wisps of red satin get out of a Maserati, with the ease of someone used to driving about a foot off the ground. She nodded to a bleach blonde in yellow silk, and her earrings caught the light. The huge things sparkled like lasers, despite the fact that we had to be a third of a football field away.
"Remind me why we didn't take Radu's Bugatti,"
Ray muttered, adjusting his suit. It was a little wrinkled, having been dug out of a suitcase less than an hour ago, but he looked fine. I'd thought I did, too, but suddenly, an LBD and black pumps just didn't cut it. But at least one of our group was styling, I thought, watching the car in question sling around the drive, bypass the peasants, and careen to a stop directly in front of the building. "That's why," I said, as Luis Cesar got out and tossed a valet the keys. He had a fleet of cars back home, but that was 3 hours away, so he'd borrowed Claire's. Like he'd grabbed a tux off the rack since he didn't have time to go back for any of the bespoke numbers in his closet. But goddamn, you'd never know it.
I don't know why he gets to be Mr. Look-at-me,
Ray grumbled.
I could have done that job.
I stayed quiet because, no, Ray could not have done that job. Nobody could have done that job like Luis Cesar, who had effortlessly captured everyone's attention without saying a word. The blonde and the brunette stopped and stared. An older woman, swaddled in mink, despite the weather, almost fell off the steps before her husband caught her. Even the valet did a double take. Because Luis Cesar shone from the dark auburn mane, which had been slicked back into a discreet clip at the base of his neck, to the platinum and diamonds that glittered on his cufflinks and studded the front of his shirt, to the glossy berlutis on his feet. He hadn't bothered with a tie, because when you look that good, you don't need a tie, or with the open container laws, despite the fact that the car was in convertible mode. He grabbed a bottle of Dom out of the passenger side, took a swig straight out of the bottle, and stared up the steps like he owned the place. He looked gorgeous. He looked rich. He looked ready to drop a huge amount of dough. Most importantly, he drew the freaking eye, which was his job, specifically to make enough of a spectacle to give security something to watch besides us. Which was why he was all blinged out, and the rest of us were sneaking in a side door looking as bland and boring as possible. Or we were supposed to be. But some weird movement caught my eye, and I glanced over at the shadowy side of the building to see Curly dancing around, cussing, and repeatedly jamming his card into a reader by the door.
Shit, Ray said. I thought he had access, I said. He's supposed to have access.
It doesn't look like he has access.
I don't have access,
Curly said, jogging back over.
Why not?
Ray demanded.
You said they have you over here all the time. They do.
Beads of sweat were forming on the bald head.
Every time something goes wrong, I'm their go-to. It's not enough they steal my idea. They expect me to make it work, too. And for 15 years experience, what do I get? A pissant consulting fee.
And a card somebody canceled.
It's still working at the gate. That probably means I've just been bumped down a level in clearance.
They're not worried about you. They're just battening down,
Rufus translated. James's dad was the fourth member of our little squad, and I was unhappy about it. He looked like an older, darker, more wizened version of Curly, except instead of curls, he had a little ring of snow-white fuzz around his head, and unlike Curly's deer-caught-in-the-headlights expression, his was shrewd and focused. I'd nipped by his shop to get resupplied, because I was almost out of everything, and had let slip what was going on. I'd hoped it would get me access to the not-entirely-legal stash in his back room. Instead, it got me a partner. And there was no getting around it. If I hadn't agreed to take him along, he was going to scream bloody murder to the core, which was all this needed. A bunch of jarheads with too much magic and a serious lack of subtlety. We needed to get in, get out, and do it quietly. We did not need the core. So Rufus it was. I just hoped I wasn't going to have to tell James that I'd gotten his dad killed.
Well, go in the front, Curly was saying. It's okay, they know me. They know Hutt, too,
Ray said, gesturing at me.
That's the whole point. So leave her out. She's the Vogger. We can't leave her out.
We also couldn't stand around discussing this. After Curly spilled the beans, Marlowe had given us exactly 1 hour to locate the weapons and rescue James before he sent in his boys. They were already getting into position, a literal army of vampires ready to swoop down on the cache as soon as we found it. Assuming we did, because the damned things read like people, and this place was packed. It was the only reason Marlowe gave a shit about James. He assumed he'd be with the weapons. And considering how vindictive Ulfilt was, and that these things could level half the city, rushing in without knowing exactly where they were wasn't smart. Of course, neither was letting her do whatever she was planning, hence the compromise. And my latest ulcer. Because guess who was supposed to deal with Ulfilt if she spotted us? Rufus had been watching me. He patted the big black suitcase he was carrying. Among other things, it contained a duplicate syringe to the one I had taped to my thigh.
"We get this in him, and he won't be a problem."
"But Alfilt might," I pointed out. "She can jump to somebody else if she loses James."
"Maybe not. They share a consciousness at the moment, from what I understand. If he goes out fast enough, she may too."
"May," Ray said darkly. "That's great. We may not end up in the stew pot. I feel much better now."
"You can stay behind,"
Rufus said curtly. The man was laser-focused, looking like he was ready and able to take on the whole place by himself. But he wasn't, which was why I stepped on Ray's foot to shut his mouth even before Curly grabbed him.
"No, he can't. He can't stay here. You promised."
Curly was a little squirrely without his friend slash teddy bear.
"He can stay. We can all stay," I said. "We just have to find a way through that door without anybody noticing."
And then someone did it for us. I jerked my neck around when what sounded like a bomb went off, and was just in time to see the sturdy security gate come flying through the ward and skidding down the middle of the street, where it was promptly run down by Frankentruck, burning rubber, billowing smoke, and looking like a ride straight out of hell.
"What the fuck?"
Ray said, stumbling back, although we were nowhere near the drive. But then neither was the truck. It smashed through a flower bed, careened back the other way to crack the fountain, and finally straightened up to gouge the blacktop, all while leaking in a fiery oil to set the pretty bushes on fire. It didn't hit the brakes until it was halfway up the great swath of steps, just missing Claire's Batmobile, and sending a bunch of beautiful people scattering and screaming. The engine died a second later, judging by the clouds of smoke cascading out from under the hood. It was almost enough to hide Luis Cesar's expression as he jumped out of the way, and to obscure the front entrance in billows of white. Great big billows. I looked at the guys. The guys looked at me.
"I think I just wet my pants,"
Curly breathed. And then we were darting across the road, up the steps and through the entrance, unnoticed by the security guys, who suddenly had their hands full. We ran through the atrium, which had a ceiling covered in strips of hanging, rippling glass that resembled seaweed, and which were chiming in the wind and smoke blowing through the doors. And then we veered off to the side and around a corner, because Curly was heading for the John, damn him. Ray shrugged at me and followed. Curly was the only one who knew anything about this place, and we needed him.
"What are the trolls doing here?"
Rufus asked, as I pretended to check a stocking to get my hair to fall in my face.
"Don't know. Olga's been searching for her nephew, who we think was taken by slavers."
"Well, she won't find him here, and she's likely to screw up this whole thing."
I glanced at him through my bangs.
"You want to tell her that?"
Rufus looked like he was considering it, but the dust up behind us was already getting heated, with a few fists being flung around, along with something else. Something that zipped here and there through the fog like dark bugs. Dark bugs with eyes. Dark bugs the size of soccer balls that...
"Damn," I said, with feeling.
"What now?"
"Reporters."
And sure enough, a couple dozen camera balls were whizzing about, getting in people's faces, along with what appeared to be every reporter in town jumping out of a bunch of cars that must have followed the truck and screaming questions at the security guards. We needed to get gone. Luckily, Ray pulled an annoyed-looking Curly out of the bathroom a moment later.
"Can a guy take a piss?"
And then we were through, into the huge main room. I caught it in glimpses, because there was so much to take in all at once. A white marble floor, with a mosaic of the sculpture outside, and Oceanid carved around it in gold. A huge wall of glass on the opposite end, outside of which a passing ship was lit up like a Christmas tree. Slot machines, table games, a large bar with an abstract wave pattern in the big open space directly ahead. And on the walls? I had no freaking idea. The non-glass sides of the building had four balconies going up, all overlooking the main room. They were connected to the ground floor by open staircases fore and aft, the ultra-modern kind that seemed to hang in space all by themselves. Although that wasn't the weird part. The weird part was what was on them. Large, round doorways studded the walls in lines, like portholes on a ship. There were no actual doors, leaving the openings dark and kind of ominous, except for one on the lowest balcony to the left, which had just lit up with a circle of little lights curving around it, inset into the stone. The lights were shaped like a bunch of orange squid, colorful and oddly cartoonish, glowing against all that white. But they seemed to make a bunch of people really happy, because a sizable chunk of the crowd peeled off and headed that way, some with glasses still in hand, chatting and laughing and booking it as much as high heels would allow. "What's going on?" I asked. "Nobody, because I was the only dummy still standing out in the open like this."
"Come on!"
Ray beckoned from halfway up the nearby staircase, and I hurried to join him. The balcony, when we reached it, gave a better view of what was happening across the room at the squid door. The big round opening let out into a circular waiting room, still kind of dim, with a few benches hugging the sides, covered in the same dark blue as the walls and floor. It made them almost melt into the darkness and disappear, like the people. Because I had just watched maybe a couple hundred tuxes and evening gowns be swallowed up by the entrance, and now? Where were they now? Because there was almost nobody in there. Just a few stragglers headed for the door, and a woman adjusting a shoe strap while hanging on to her date, who had stopped to consult a small notebook. "Where did they go?" I asked, before I noticed. The dark wall behind them had another big round door in it, like the one leading in. It was dark enough that I hadn't immediately noticed it next to the midnight blue wall, but now that I did, I couldn't unsee it, because it was filled with a rippling, inky blackness that was swallowing people up like a giant maw.
"What is this place?" I asked,
and Curly snorted.
"Geminis, darling. I designed it, he built it. It was my payment for protection."
"But what is it?"
"A modern-day Colosseum. He used to be a gladiator, you know, in old Rome."
I nodded.
"He was there when they flooded the real Colosseum for a great naval battle. It's what gave him the idea."
"The idea for what?"
"A new type of fights. Through each of those doors is a portal to a different water environment, here and in Faerie. Only, instead of ships and crews fighting each other, like the Romans did, Geminis used..."
"Fae." Curly nodded.
"All different kinds. That's what people are really gambling on here. The table games are just to keep 'em occupied in between bouts."
"Like in Vegas,"
Ray said.
"They got fights in some of the casinos out there."
Curly's lip curled.
"No, not like in Vegas. Geminis thought a fight wasn't worth a damn if somebody didn't die."
"He set up portals to different areas for the different types of competitors," I said, finally getting it, and looking around with a sinking feeling, because there were a lot of doors. Instead of a single building, we were now faced with searching... what, exactly? Half the seafloor?
"No one building could have held all the environments he wanted,"
Curly confirmed.
"So the bouts are held out there."
He gestured at the dark sea beyond the windows.
"Everywhere from the Arctic Ocean to the Caribbean. The audience passes through portals here, into warded viewing areas, and the fighters enter the open sea through separate portals in their holding tanks. And then they go at it."
"But if they're out in the open sea, why don't they just swim away?"
Ray asked.
"Geminis kept family members back here, in holding tanks down below as hostages. Escape from the scene of a fight or refuse to fight."
"And they kill your family," I said, remembering the little girl at the theater. Ray gave Curly a shove.
"And you helped him?"
The blue eyes grew big with alarm.
"I didn't know all this at first. My idea was for an interactive theater, a spectacle. Like, at my place, only bigger. Geminis turned it into something else, and by the time I realized what he was doing, I was in too deep. So you just kept doing it, you little... I didn't have a choice.
You said some of the portals go to Fairy, I interrupted before we got off track. Then why did Geminis need the one at your theater?
He didn't. The family did. After his death, the Senate was watching them like a hawk, but nobody was watching me.
But now his guys are back in business.
Yeah.
He looked around resentfully.
They trashed my place, so they just came back here. I don't know how they think they're gonna get away with it. The Circle does checks on places like this.
They recently acquired an inn with the Circle. Rufus and I exchanged glances.
Well, that's just great, Ray said. All these people mean we can't use magic to pinpoint the weapons. And now you tell me we gotta search?
He broke off to count.
20 portals?
40. 20 on this side, too,
Curly pointed out. Ray cursed.
How the hell are we supposed to search 40 portals?
I don't know. You said, get you in. I got you in. Now I gotta go to the John.
You just went to the John.
I have a tiny bladder. It's a condition.
He said something else, too, but I didn't hear, because the front doors went crashing into the main room, followed by 50,000 pounds of pissed-off war machine. And I didn't just mean the truck. Looked like the party had come to us. Chapter 58. I guess the truck hadn't died after all, just got hung up on the steps, because it came barreling into the room, shattering the pretty glass lobby and slinging around, and started offloading trolls, tons of them. It looked like a clown car at the circus. They just kept coming. But instead of big red noses and floppy shoes, they were wearing full-on armor, huge helmets, massive breastplates, even shin guards. And it wasn't just Olga's usual crew. I didn't know most of these guys, although I was pretty sure I'd seen a few at the burnt-out building fight. And it looked like they were ready for a new one.
What are they doing?
Ray yelled to be heard over the trolls, who were also yelling, and banging on massive shields and slamming equally massive spears into the floor, hard enough to crack the tile. Olga got out and clambered on top of the cab, and if I thought she looked like Boudicca before, it was nothing compared to this. She was armored, too, including a shiny bronze helmet, a breastplate that truly deserved the term, and a sword in her fist that had to be 6 feet long. She roared, a word that in no way does that sound justice, and which was completely unlike the triumphal noise I'd heard her make at the theater. This one was full of anguish and fury, a primal, heart-stopping, gut-wrenching cry that had all my hairs standing on end and my knees weak. The beating and stamping and assorted other sounds abruptly stopped, and so did everything else. A couple slot games chimed quietly to themselves, and somebody dropped a glass. But nobody moved. Nobody spoke. For a space that a minute ago had been loud and boisterous, it was pretty impressive. And then Olga started talking, and it was more so.
Tim! Gerard!
The shout was loud enough to shake the rafters.
Come out and face me! Come out and die!
Nobody came out. I didn't really blame them.
You go into our hills, Olga spat. You lead slavers to hidden villages. You rip children from mother's arms, sell like animals. Those you not sell, you kill. You kill my sister's son, my blood. Now I take yours. Come out and face me. Come out and die.
Shit. It looked like I hadn't been the only one doing some investigating, and Olga's had not ended in good news, for her or the bastards responsible.
Worse, you sell bones,
Olga said, her voice low and savage, but it went through the room like a shout.
You sell souls! You make weapons from our people to use on our people! You blaspheme and defile! No more!"
There was a sound from the crowd then, a murmur that swept not through the staring humans, motionless in their gowns and jewels, but through the trolls. Only that isn't the right word. A murmur implies something soft, and there was none of that here. A low, furious vibration was more like it, one that shook the floor under my feet despite the fact that I was standing on a balcony. If rage had a sound, that would be it.
"What's going on?"
Ray whispered. I thought about what Blue had told me. "I think 6 and 7 are about to have a very bad day."
"What?"
I shook my head.
"Come out and face me," Olga thundered. "Come out and die."
And this time somebody did come out, but it wasn't white hair or gravel face. It wasn't trolls at all, but vampires. What looked like a whole army of them unleashed from doorways on both sides of the ground floor like an unending flood. And while I was sure Olga's crew was good, I didn't think they were that good. Until somebody else tore out of the truck, literally, grabbed Olga off the cab and then picked it up and threw it across the room. The approaching horde scattered, like pins when a bowling ball smashes through them. And another indescribable sound went up from every troll in the place, including from my throat because it was contagious. Blue roared, and we roared with him, a deafening, ear-splitting cry that shook the walls. Then the two armies clashed, and everything was chaos.
"Part of Geminis family, my ass!" Ray yelled. "This is the whole thing. It's gotta be."
Yeah, it did. Which was not going to work for a variety of reasons, but I didn't have time to list them right now, because we'd been recognized. A wave of vamps leapt for the balcony, and Ray and I grabbed stakes from Rufus's suitcase and prepared for a back-to-back, no-holds-barred fight. I was trying to protect Rufus and get him in between us until I realized he didn't need it. He pushed me off, grabbed his case, and let loose. For a moment, I just stood there getting schooled. Because, sure, I bought some stuff to even the field from time to time, but I wasn't a mage. And the difference between what I did and what a century and a half old magical arms dealer could do was eye-opening. Rufus had unfolded a stand from one side of his suitcase, making it into a little table. It looked like something a traveling magician would use as a platform for card tricks, or maybe pulling a bunny out of a hat. Only I didn't see any bunnies. What I did see were a flock of bolas made out of light that went sizzling through the air to wrap around vamp legs and then drag them backward, while sinking into their flesh as if trying to eat through it. I saw something scatter from a vial that was almost too bright to look at, a dazzle that strobed the room and caused the vamps heading for us to scream and shield their eyes, while their flesh burned and bubbled off their bones. I saw nets, made out of what looked like the same stuff as the webs at the theater, that snared half of the oncoming assault. And then Rufus sent a pulse through them, slammed back against the floor a story below, leaving the snared vamps sizzling and smoking, and trolls enthusiastically stomping on their heads. Yet the vamps just kept coming. I saw a bunch of magical throwing stars, like mine, but incredibly fast, zip through the crowd, flaying a path. I saw a dislocator hit a bunch of vamps, turning them into something that looked like a rat king, a single creature with numerous heads and limbs sticking out at odd angles. I saw a mass of black circles, filmy and indistinct, that fluttered out into the air like they were made out of tissue paper and didn't seem to do anything at all. Until a handful landed on a vamp leaping for me, and he suddenly looked like Swiss cheese. Because they weren't circles, they were holes. And everywhere they touched, something suddenly went missing. Yet the vamps just kept coming. I got a stake in my latest problem, ducked under a knife swipe and took out two more, then jerked back the head of a guy trying to strangle Ray, who pulled free, dodged under another assault, spun and slit the vamp's throat, and drenched us both in bright red blood because he hadn't even been a master.
but there were plenty that were. Enough that, barely a minute into the fight, Rufus switched to the big guns, although they didn't look like it. They didn't look like much of anything, just a handful of small silver discs, which put out tiny pincers and glommed on to the mass of shirts and trousers around us, and then projected what looked like a bunch of quarter-sized swirls of color and light that opened up in front of the vamps. I didn't know why. And then I realized they weren't in front of the vamps.
"Oh, shit! Oh, fuck! Oh, shit!"
Ray said, as one of the nearest masters looked down in time to see his whole midsection get sucked inside the growing portal. It was the size of a saucer when it finished consuming his chest in a swirl of angry red flesh and yellowish fat, and a dinner plate by the time it pulled in his legs. And then I guess it ran out of steam, because it winked out with the guy's head still here and somehow still alive, with malevolent eyes staring, staring, staring. Until I kicked it down the hall and looked up, panting, and saw another wave headed our way. It's what people often forget about vamps, and what makes fighting them so damned hard. Hurting them is easy, if you're good and fast, or slow but tricky. But killing them is something else altogether, and if you don't kill them, they just keep coming. And then suddenly I was eating carpet. Ray screamed, "Troll!" about the time that he smacked me and Rufus to the floor, and I looked up to see a couple thousand pounds of muscle slam overhead and into the wall behind us. The troll appeared to be dead, judging by the fact that half his torso was missing. But the body took out a bunch of vamps anyway, sending them crashing against the stone and then smearing along the wall under his momentum. They left a bloody swath that stretched halfway down the corridor, but that wasn't what had me staring. I'd seen Blue survive a combined spell that would have taken down a platoon. Yet this troll had a burning crater in his chest, and had also been flung from halfway across the building. What the fuck? And then Rufus suddenly stopped with a magical mayhem and threw up a shield, one that bloomed with angry colors a second later, along with scrabbling, burning vamps, because somebody hadn't waited for their allies to get out of the way before lobbing an attack.
"Mages!"
someone yelled. It might have even been me. I wasn't sure because, while the shield had saved our asses, it also acted like a kettle drum, trapping the sound of all those spells inside, to the point that I thought my head might burst. Rufus did something to tone the sound down, enough that I could hear Ray yelling at me.
"Call Marlowe!"
"I can't call Marlowe!"
"You have to! We're getting slaughtered here!"
"And half the city will go with us if they set those weapons off. Some pissed-off trolls probably won't do it because they'll think they can take them."
"Probably because they can."
"But Marlowe's men show up and it's over."
"It's over anyway if we're stuck behind this shield."
He had a point. I fished out my phone and called somebody, but it wasn't Marlowe.
"Roberto?"
I yelled, barely able to hear myself.
"Dori."
The thick, rounded Italian syllables always made it sound like he was eating. Of course, he usually was.
"You got the stanza truck? It keeps bugging me. Pretty soon, I gotta bug you. Know what I'm saying?"
"I'll get around to it. I'm partying with my boys over at Oceanid right now."
"That place is closed down."
"They said that's what they told you. I said they'd better pay you your percentage because this is your turf. Everybody knows that."
"But they're laughing over here."
"Laughing?"
"About this being your territory. Said they're taking over."
"I got the deal with Geminis."
The wolf growl was starting to eclipse the mellow Italian vowels.
"But Geminis is dead, and they say you've run things long enough. They got a little troll problem at the moment, but as soon as it's over, they're coming for you."
"They're coming for me? I'm coming for them."
"Better get here fast, then. And remember, the trolls are on your side."
I hung up. Ray just looked at me.
"You think inviting a crazy, weird gang boss is gonna help?"
"Can it hurt?"
"Yeah. Like when he figures out that you set him up to..."
Ray broke off and stared at something behind me.
"Shit."
"Shit? What shit?" And then I followed his gaze.
"Shit!"
Because Curly hadn't gone to the John after all. I could just make him out, through the psychedelic shield, standing on the third-floor balcony across from us with something in his hands. It looked like some sort of controller, small and black, and, yeah, it was controlling things all right. Or maybe it was a total coincidence that one of the big round doorways suddenly opened up like the floodgates had lifted, or like a portal had reversed, to gush water down onto the frenzied crowd. Satins were drenched, silks were ruined, and people went slip-sliding for the doors, those who hadn't already been headed that way because of the massive brawl going on.
"I knew he was too willing to come along," Ray raged. "He planned this."
Yeah, he had. I couldn't hear him, even with Domphir's senses, but I could lip-read.
"Payback time, bitches."
Great. And then it was. It really, really was. Because it wasn't just water squeezing through the big round opening, it was...
"What the fuck is that?"
Ray screamed, sounding almost outraged. I laughed the laugh of the faintly hysterical, because Cthulhu had just made his entrance, or something that looked like him. Well, it would if he were scarlet and three stories tall. As it was, I guessed it was a combatant from Faerie. And it was pissed. The creature started laying waste with arms the size of tree trunks, if the trees in question were redwoods, and a maw full of holy hell that could spear a vamp clean through and then fling him the length of the room to splat against the pretty windows. Okay, I thought. All right. Then I realized we were still losing.
How are we still losing?
Ray demanded, as half the mages and a good number of the vamps peeled off from us to attack Big Red. Yet Rufus was still sweating bullets trying to maintain the shield. And out in the fray, I saw a mage materialize a glowing spear and run it through three trolls at once.
"What the hell are they doing?" Rufus panted, his dark eyes pained. "How are they this strong?"
"They're using the merchandise," I said, staring around.
"What?"
"They have to be. But I couldn't see. And then I did. There!" I pointed to a couple vamps with a very familiar-looking crate on the far side of the room by the windows. Another crate was already open, and the contents were being passed around, which was probably why a charge of maybe 20 trolls was repulsed like it was nothing, sending them slamming backward what had to be 30 yards, and why a bunch more were already floating face down in what was now hip-deep water.
"Orga was right,"
Ray said, gripping my arm.
"They're gonna kill us using weapons made out of their own people."
"No, they're not." I scanned the room again. "Stay here."
"What?"
"Just guard Rufus for a moment, okay?"
"What are you... No!"
And then when he realized what was about to happen...
"No! Don't you dare!"
But I did, because I didn't have a choice. Another minute of those things and there wouldn't be anybody on our side left standing. And it wasn't going to go down like that. "I'll be right back," I told him, and jumped. The shield Rufus had thrown up was the kind that let people out but not in. Although, judging by the expression of the vamp I grabbed, nobody had really expected me to leave, or to use him as a buffer to keep the mage's spells off me while I leapt over the balcony and into thin air and grabbed one of the little black camera balls as it whizzed past. The sizzling body of the vamp fell into the drink, and I took off, under an enormous slashing tentacle, through another huge waterfall that had just opened up, and out the other side, drenched and gasping, only to slam into a line of vamps leaning over the railing, one of which grabbed me, and found himself flung into the windows a second later when I popped a leg and looked around for... Yes! Richard! Richard Kim! The shout was unnecessary because the reporter had already spotted me. He was standing on the balcony below Curly and staring at me with his mouth hanging open. I have no idea why. I waved the ball around at him and then pointed with my toes, since my hands were busy.
"Over there! Send me there!"
But he didn't send me there. He didn't send me anywhere. He just stood there, the controller limp and useless in his hands, while the camera and I went around and around in a little circle.
"Dick!"
I said fervently, as a vamp jumped up at me from the floor, and missed, because Richard suddenly got with the program and swerved me abruptly to the side, and then sent me careening through a minefield of leaping vampires, slashing water, and a merman that tried to stab me with a trident, because I guess to him all humans look alike. But I did a handstand on the ball, and he ended up stabbing the vamp, jumping up behind me instead. And then I jerked his weapon out of the vamp and sent it flying into the group around the crate. What looked like blue-white electricity spidered across the knot of vamps, causing some to fall out and everyone else to look around in shock. Right before I added to the chaos by plowing into the middle of them, I grabbed the crate, hit a vamp in the head with it, got hit back, saw stars, and ended up hanging off the camera ball by my knees with the crate in my hands while three, make that four, vamps tried to pull it away from me. But the camera was stronger than it looked and kept on tugging, and I hung on to the crate with one hand while I used the other to get a stake in the lead guy. He let go, and since the others had been holding on to him, they all fell back too, and suddenly I was flying. Straight at someone who had just appeared on the balcony, grabbed the remote from Richard and used it to jerk me over to him. Somebody with a topknot of dark braids and burning alien eyes. Somebody who looked like he'd like to rip my throat out like the vampire he wasn't, but which the damned bitch riding him had once been. James. I felt my lips form the word, but no sound came out. It was okay. There was nothing of the man I knew in those eyes anyway. But there was surprise when I tossed the crate to Olga, grabbed the ball with one hand and him with the other, and jerked him over the balcony.
"I have the controller,"
the thing that wasn't James snarled.
"What do you think this is going to do?"
"This." I used my feet to push off from the railing as hard as I could, sending us speeding back into the thick of the fight and straight into the path of one of Cthulhu's thrashing limbs. The next thing I knew, I was eating stone on the other side of the room. Chapter 59. I don't know how fast we were going when we hit the wall, but it was officially too damned fast. I felt myself peel away and fall heavily to the floor, the slow-mo vamp senses that were supposed to protect me kicking in a split second too late. They didn't help with a blow, but did make it feel like I took a long time to crash down, giving me a chance to notice an imprint of my made-up face that had been left behind on the plaster. Huh. And then James was on me. He must have somehow gotten a shield up in the maybe 2 seconds he'd had, because he wasn't looking all that affected. Or maybe you didn't win with a Varger riding you. After all, they didn't care how much damage they caused their avatar, but I did. Which would have left me at a disadvantage if I'd been planning to fight him, but I wasn't. I wasn't going to break his nose either, but my senses were screwy and my aim was off. "Sorry," I said insanely, and heard it echo in the distortion of the slow-mo while his head kicked back, allowing me to get a leg around him and bring him down. I was also fumbling for the wrist of the hand he was raising to curse me with, but I didn't get it. Not because he was too fast. Human reflexes in slow-mo are ridiculously sluggish. But because I was seeing double or maybe triple and couldn't figure out which one it was. But the next second he went limp anyway, which had my heart hammering until I noticed Rufus standing over him, syringe in hand. I lay back against the carpet, panting and thanking Cthulhu, and wondering where all the vamps had gone because nobody else seemed to be attacking me.
"Luis Cesar,"
Ray said when I asked. His voice was distorted and echoey because I couldn't seem to snap out of slow-mo, like I couldn't seem to stand up properly, even when Ray levered James off me. I smacked the side of my head a couple times, but it hurt so I stopped, and looked around for Luis Cesar but didn't see him.
"Where is he?"
I asked Ray.
"He was covered in blood, but I got the impression that it was mostly other people's."
"Don't know."
He tried to put an arm around me for some reason, but I batted him away.
"He showed up, cleared the balcony, then ran off chasing some vamps. Now let's get out of here."
"We can't get out. We only did half the job." I'd been on the way to my feet, but they got confused, and I abruptly sat down again.
"Ow."
Ray crouched down in front of me while Rufus rigged up one of those floating stretchers for James. The guy really had thought of everything. I watched him slowly roll his son's body onto it, until Ray turned my cheek back to face him.
Listen to me. We got what we got, okay? We're not gonna find the rest of those weapons, not in this. And you're not at your best.
I'm fine.
You just took a hit that would have leveled the troll. You are not fine.
I scowled at him, and then tried to push his finger out of my face, although I couldn't seem to catch it. Stop moving.
I'm not moving. And you're done.
You don't get to tell me that.
Well, somebody needs to.
I scowled at him. You're supposed to be what, my second? He looked surprised for what seemed like a long moment, but was probably just a flash across his face. Maybe because a second was a master's leading servant, and kind of a big deal. But since the only vamps I had were Ray's, it seemed appropriate. But I guess he hadn't stopped to think about it before.
Yeah, he told me. I guess so.
Well, a vampire's second does what he's told. Ray snorted.
You must not have known many seconds.
What does that mean?
It means that they do a lot of different jobs, depending on what the family needs. But the main one is to tell the master what he don't want to hear.
To be a pain in the ass, in other words.
A useful pain in the ass.
Then you're perfect for the job.
Thank you,
Ray said, and pulled me back up again. I grabbed the railing, not that I needed it, and looked around. Olga must have realized what I'd flung at her, because it looked like the battle was evening out. But that could change really fast, and I hated the idea of just abandoning her. Plus, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was missing something. I had the weirdest impression that not only were the rest of the weapons here, but I was staring right at them. It was maddening. And if Marlowe came into this mess with no clue where they were... Ding! I started at the sound and looked around, but it hadn't come from another weird magical device or from the drowning slots, which had been spazzing out this whole time, but from something behind me. And for once, it was something benign. It looked like nobody had turned off whatever system controlled the fights, because the doorway behind us had just lit up, announcing a new one. A ring of little green crabs decorated the stone all around the opening, like the orange squid had on the other door. I guess they meant something to the regulars, maybe some clue to the venue or the type of combatants. I wondered if Cthulhu's door had red octopuses.
Dory, we're ready.
It was Ray, but I barely heard him over the ding, 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 only this time it wasn't the door chiming. It was my head.
Dory, you up to taking point, or you want to bring up the rear?
I didn't answer. Instead, I turned around and stared at all the porthole-looking doorways, each of which had a different symbol around it. Only there was so much smoke and potion residue drifting around that I couldn't make most of them out. But if I could have...
Dory!
A touch on my shoulder.
You okay?
Yeah, I thought. Yeah! I whirled around, got dizzy, straightened up, and grabbed Rufus. Can you do a reveal spell?
What?
Can you?
Yes, of course.
He blinked at me.
On what?
On them. I gestured outward. Can you make the little symbols on the doorways light up? Rufus looked like he was about to ask why, then seemed to decide it would be quicker just to oblige. And all of a sudden, every door in the place was ringed in a circle of brilliant symbols, glowing brightly against all that white. Blue swordfish, pink hammerheads, teal mermen, some weird black snake-like things.
What are you doing?
Ray demanded. Gray whales, yellow sea lions, and some purple three-tailed creature that ought to be on a coffee cup.
Dory, I'm looking for fish. What? Why?
Because fish tracks door. Ray looked at me worriedly.
You do know you're not making sense, right?
There! And there they were, aqua-colored fish tracking around a door on the fourth balcony up, all the way in the corner. That's it! Ray, I think that's it!
That's what? What are you...
He broke off abruptly. I was still staring at the door, so it took me a second to wonder why, and then I turned around.
and didn't have to wonder.
Ray was still standing there, but I wasn't sure how, because somebody had just punched all the way through his middle, leaving me looking at a gory fist and Ray's shocked eyes. And then the fist was jerked back out again, along with his spine. But that wasn't what had me frozen in shock. No, that was because of who had done it.
"Luis Cesar," I said blankly.
And then Dorina threw us over the railing.
The vampire was fast. I'd give him that. As I sailed into space, I felt his fingertips brush me, warm against the skin of my arm. And then I was gone, grabbing one of the camera balls that had been speeding past and reaching for my phone to alert the one they called Marlowe, and having it knocked from my fingers. Because Luis Cesar was already there, a split second behind me, dangling by one hand from the camera James had been using, leaving him plenty of options for attack. But there was something different this time, between Dory and me, because she was still awake, leaving us with more options, too. I took the offense, slipping my foot under the hand grip for the camera, because these things were designed to be used more than one way, and grabbed the controller a reporter tossed me as I passed, using it to somersault under the vampire, grab a club from a troll, come up behind him, and bash him in the back of the head. It felt like hitting a brick wall and did no observable damage. Of course, I wasn't done yet. But we went spinning away before I could try again, because Dory had the controller and was screaming at me.
"Don't kill him!"
"Same head," I reminded her shortly, because he was already coming back this way. "Don't yell."
"Then answer me!"
I didn't answer, because she didn't need it. The best way to lose a fight was to use half measures against an opponent using full ones. Especially this one, I thought, watching as he duplicated my movement. Only he didn't grab a troll's club. He grabbed the troll. It was a smaller one, which I dodged easily. But he sent two more my way just afterward, and was moving fast enough to be annoying. I decided to drop into the mental state vampires used in battle, the one that made everyone else seem to slow down just to be on the safe side. Only to realize I was already there. That would explain why people in the flood were looking around with startled expressions. To them, it must have seemed as if their allies or opponents had simply disappeared, plucked up and tossed like living boulders across the room. It must have seemed like that to the creatures as well. I saw one's ferocious expression change to bewilderment as he sailed past, especially after I pulled his sword from his hands, and just managed to get it up in time to meet the one slashing down at me. The vampire was also strong, I discovered, surprisingly so. He'd fought my twin before, but he'd apparently been pulling his punches. He wasn't pulling them now, or to be more precise, the creature controlling him wasn't. If we'd been on the ground, he might have done some serious damage. But we weren't on the ground. We were flying above the battle, balancing on a couple of speeding camera balls, while dodging the spells being flung at us from the ground and a few balconies. And it looked like he didn't know how to fight this way. I smiled, showing Fang, as our swords rang together and as Dory took us down at the same moment, ruining his momentum as we dipped underneath and then zipped away. But he learned fast, because the next time he didn't come for us, he came for the ball. And it seemed that I had been wrong. He wasn't fast, he was quicksilver. He was lightning flashing across the sky. He was faster than the spells we were dodging, which boiled by almost leisurely in comparison. He was faster than me. Not by much, just a fraction of a second, but sometimes that's all you need. There followed a blur of motion, a strange aerial ballet across the room, each of us standing on a speeding camera, swirling and ducking and somersaulting, and silent except for the staccato ring of swords clashing together almost too fast to see, even for me. It was heady, exhilarating. I'd never known anything like it, as each of us tried to find an advantage and each of us failed. Until that split second came into play. I saw the blur of the blade coming for my mechanical platform, but wasn't fast enough to dodge it. So I jumped, straight up, just as the blade turned the camera I'd been using into so many flying parts. And I flipped, landing on the vamp in a judo hold, one leg around his neck, a stake in my hand. Only to have Dory throw off my aim.
and before I could recover, a wave of static hit me like a fist, like a thousand fists, boiling behind my eyes. I heard myself scream, felt Dory convulse, but